You know, there are a few things that can help you remember how small you are compared to the rest of the universe than looking up at those stars. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. If you're like me, you enjoy looking up and seeing what's going on up there. And it's even better when you know in advance that there's an exciting event coming or going on and how to understand what you're seeing. And it's always a treat when Paul Kinzer comes by. He is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. And Paul, always great. Thank you so much for coming by today. Appreciate it.
Yep, I'm always glad to come.
Well, this Thursday, the 23rd, there's going to be a partial solar eclipse. And maybe to start with, what happens when there's a solar eclipse?
A solar eclipse is when the new moon passes in front of the sun. It, just by coincidence, the sun and the moon appear about the same size in our sky. It's interesting to me. The sun is about 400 times farther away than the moon, and it's about 400 times wider, so they appear the same size. And we go around the sun, and the moon goes around us, and every once in a while, the two paths meet up, and the moon passes in front of the sun. And then 2 weeks before that, if folks got up, there was a lunar eclipse. And then
it was beautiful.
Yeah, the moon was on the opposite side of the Earth from where it will be this Thursday. And that time, the Earth passed in front of the moon. So again, we saw a shadow crossing another planet.
It was really cool. And partial, just so it, you know.
This time, the moon will only pass in front of part of the sun. And in fact, often when that happens, if you travel somewhere, you could see a total eclipse where the moon completely covers the face of the sun. But this particular one, that doesn't happen no matter where you go. It's a partial.
Okay. How common is a partial?
Just the path that the moon travels this time around. It just happens to go a little too high or a little too low, depending on where you are, to block all the light of the sun.
And what will be the best time to see it?
Well, that's kind of the neat thing. If the clouds let us see it, and it's looking like they may not, but if there's a peek through the clouds, even right at sunset, right as the sun is going down, about half of the sun will be covered by the moon. So it will look like a crescent sun. And that's the neat thing about sunset. Of course, we can't look at the sun usually, but right near sunset, we often can. It might even be a really nice photo opportunity. And starting at about 4:30, that's when the moon starts biting the sun, and it will continue doing that right until the sun goes down at about 6. It'll still be going on.
So it's one of those times where you don't have to be up at 4 in the morning or whatever.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things about observing the sun. If you like astronomy but you just are not a night person, well, the sun is there every single day, and there's often interesting things to see. I just found out last night there's a very large sunspot that the sun takes about 20 some days to spin once, and 3 or 4 days ago, a sunspot, which is a storm on the sun, turned into our view, and it's very prominent right now. In fact, on my way here today, I was going through some dense fog, so I was actually able to look at the sun, and this sunspot is so huge, I could see it with my naked eye. Wow. That's big.
That's big.
Yeah, it's far, far bigger than Earth, probably 10 times or more bigger than Earth.
Wow. And what is a sunspot?
A sunspot is a magnetic storm on the sun. And what that means, I don't really know myself. It's kind of confusing. And it's a spot on the sun that looks darker than the rest of the sun. And the thing is, it's actually not dark. It's just darker than the rest of the amazingly bright sun.
Okay. We're talking today with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, about the upcoming partial solar eclipse and other fall astronomy events. Always fun to have him along. You may have a question for him, and I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Are you an amateur astronomer just looking at the night sky? What fascinates you? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can go to my Facebook page as well. We have a cool photo right up right now on my Facebook page As a matter of fact, from William, the first total eclipse earlier in the year shot between the moving cloud cover, he says, on that Facebook photo.
Yeah, and I'm looking at that photo. That is a great photo. That lunar eclipse happened in April, mm-hmm. and now we had one in October. And this doesn't happen very often, but we're going to have several pretty close to each other. There's going to be another total lunar eclipse next April, and then I believe one more next September.
That is very cool. So yeah. Give us a call. Shoot us a note on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, or a photo if you've got a cool photo, astronomical photo. We'd love to see that as well. We're talking about looking at an eclipse of the sun. There's always, every time that comes up, you see a lot of articles about not looking at the sun directly, right. and so forth. What's the word on that?
Well, I work with kids, and when we've talked about these kinds of things, I say, of course, we never look at the sun. Well, every kid knows that. I mean, even a baby knows, don't look at the sun because that hurts your eyes. But when there's something going on the sun, particularly an eclipse, people are not only interested in seeing what it looks like, they're interested in looking through binoculars or telescopes at it to increase the view. But if you increase the view, you also increase the amount of radiation and brightness that's hitting your eye. You should never, ever, ever look through a telescope that's aimed at the sun or a pair of binoculars unless it's got a filter on the front of the telescope. Sadly, there are still some telescopes sold with, they're called solar filters that you screw onto the eyepiece. They are not safe. The intense sun can actually crack them, and then suddenly the bright sun will be shining right in your eye. I had a telescope that I just swung by the sun, and just swinging it by the sun, it had a little metal lens cap on the other end of the scope, and it melted. In less than a second, it melted, so imagine what your eye will do. Now, on the other hand, there are people who say, oh my gosh, the sun is particularly dangerous during eclipses. There's something about it that's even brighter than usual. And that is not true. I had a friend when there was an eclipse in 1979. He was in grade school, and his teacher shut all the shades, saying, oh, the sun is especially dangerous today. No, that's not true. It's always dangerous to look at the sun, especially when you magnify the view.
I wanted to point out, too, that we have a link up on my Facebook page that allows anyone to put in their location, where they live or where they're going to be, and get information on where and when to see that partial solar eclipse, or probably any in the future,
right.
as well,
yep.
which is pretty cool. Join in with your questions and comments as we talk about astronomy with our guest today, Paul Kinzer. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And this partial eclipse is we've got the total eclipse coming in 2017.
That's right. August 21st, 2017, there's going to be a total solar eclipse. Unfortunately, not for us in Wisconsin, although it will be close here in Madison. 85% of the sun will be covered that day. In Milwaukee, 83%, and even way up in Bayfield, 75%. But if you went down to southern Illinois, that would be about the closest place where you could see totality. A couple of minutes where the moon completely blocks the sun. I have never seen one, and I'm really looking forward to it.
That'll be pretty cool. Jennifer says, my dad sent me to school with his welding mask to view a solar eclipse one year. Was that a good idea?
Well, I don't know a lot about welding masks. I do know that welder's glass can come in different darknesses, and I've read that some are okay, and then are others. No, you probably shouldn't look through it. It's probably too late for Thursday, but there are commercially available. They're basically, they look like sunglasses, and they have film in them that is dark enough. And they're actually very inexpensive, too. You could look online ahead of the total solar eclipse coming up. There are a lot of ways you can see what happens. If the sun is out, you can also, without looking through it, aim a telescope or binoculars at the sun, have the sun shine through, and the light comes out the back. And then you just hold up a piece of paper behind the telescope or binoculars, and it will show an image. I've also read, I've also read but haven't yet been able to experiment with this. I was actually going to do it today, but it's cloudy right now. I've read that if you just poke a little pinhole in a piece of paper and then hold it up in the sun and hold another piece of paper behind it, you can also see a small image of the sun. Those are safe ways to look.
I remember the pinhole from a previous time when we had that eclipse and tried it, and it did work.
And another pretty neat thing, again, in that 1979 eclipse, it was I was living in Minnesota at the time, and there it was a very deep partial eclipse. And I was in college, and I was outside, and the custodian for my college said, "Hey, look at the shadows." And through, this is in February, but through the needles of a pine tree, the sun was making shadows on the ground. And during an eclipse, instead of little round spots, they were little crescents. So that's another thing to look for.
Talking today with Paul Kinzer about fall astronomy events. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jennifer Dargan, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we're talking about upcoming astronomical events with Paul Kinzer. Great to have him along. And again, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Appreciate your listening. The phone number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Paul, you're involved, and I think we should, I always enjoy talking about this a little bit, some of the work that you do with children. Talk about the activities that you do with the kids.
Well, I work in the Winona, Minnesota schools with kids every day, but I also own a portable planetarium, and I travel around to libraries and schools to share the night sky during the day. And it's usually with kids, but lots of times adults are included too. And it's an inflatable dome, 16 feet across, 10 feet high. We crawl in through a tunnel, and it gets as dark as a very, very dark night, and there's a projector in the middle that shows what the sky is looking like. It's a lot of fun. I can't think of too many things that are more, more amazing than a planetarium to get the idea across of how the sky works, how it changes over time.
Yeah, it's really cool. How do people find out what you're doing or maybe get involved with you?
Well, if they just looked up my name, Paul Kinzer, and then Seeing Stars online, they would get a link to my website, which is seeingstarswi.wordpress.com. But just Kinzer and Seeing Stars would get them there. And there's other stuff on my website, too, even if they're not interested in that, pictures I've taken and things. But that is the way to get a hold of me.
And we have, I'm sure, have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well. And you have taken some amazing photos. And it's going to be fun. We'll be talking with Jack Socha in a little while about making good use of our digital cameras. And you take a lot of amazing astronomy photos. I think we have a link up on my Facebook page to some of them as well.
Yeah, I think so. And the thing about digital cameras, they've made astrophotography so much easier. You know, to get the depth that I have takes a bit of skill, but anyone now with a DSLR, if you can get to a dark sky and just aim your camera up and open the shutter, you're going to catch some things that film just wasn't sensitive enough to do.
Yeah, it's really cool. Randy in Sauk County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, I wonder if you've ever heard of this, Mr. Kinzer. When I'm in my 60s, and when I was in the third or fourth grade, we had one of these spectacular events, and it was scheduled to happen right during the school day. And our teacher at the time did the following activity. We each were to bring a shoebox to school in the previous weeks, and made the shoebox into an item that viewed the event. It had two holes in the end. I can't remember whether we aligned the inside of the shoebox so it was completely dark, but it displayed on the end one hole. You faced the back of the shoebox, you looked away from the sun and aimed it at the sun, and you looked through one hole, and then the sun was in the other hole, and there was some kind of focusing device that you could manipulate outside your box, and the better box you made, the better image you got on the end of your shoebox. And I'll never forget that. It was fabulous. We got to see the entire eclipse come and go as we sat on the school lawn that day, and it was an event I'll never forget. So it would have been in the early 60s or late 50s, not to give my age away, that this happened. And you know, very, very talented, as a lot of those rural school teachers were.
Sure.
And have you ever heard of that kind of a device to view
eclipse?
Eclipse.
Yeah.
I have. I have not seen exact plans, so I don't want to, you know, start trying to describe what I think it would be totally like. But it sounds a lot like a camera obscura. Where you have a hole, and back in the day they were the size of rooms. There'd be a small hole, and then the image of what was outside would be on the back wall. Artists used them, and it's basically where the idea of a camera came from. After a while, instead of a small hole, they put a lens on there, and then they started putting light-sensitive materials in there, and we called that film, and that's where cameras came from. But that sounds fantastic. Mm.
It sounds wonderful, and obviously here it happened all those years ago, and Randy has not forgotten.
Well, and that's the thing about eclipses, solar eclipses especially, they're not very common, so if you can look at one, it's sort of a lifetime memory.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Randy. Thank you very much for calling. I want to give Brian in Green Bay a chance to join in. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I have a question, please. During a solar eclipse, and when the moon passes in front of the sun, does the dark side of the moon get lit up?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the rock and roll band Pink Floyd. They had an album called The Dark Side of the Moon, and there's a line in the background in one song. It says, "There is no dark side of the moon, really. It's all dark." Well, that's not actually true. There is no dark side of the moon, though. One side of the moon always faces the Earth. So we always see the same side of the sun. And sometimes it's lit up. And on Thursday, it won't be lit up at all. The side facing us, that will be in shadow. And the other side, the opposite side of the moon, will be lit up by the sun. Astronomers call that the far side. It's not dark. It gets just as much light. It's just the other side. A day on the moon is the same length as its year, really. It goes around the Earth in once a month, and it also spins around once a month. And so it's lit up for about 2 weeks, and then it's dark for about 2 weeks.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Brian. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you as we talk with Paul about these fall astronomy events. As we look in the sky right now, and I'm just trying to think of the planets that we're going to see that are up there and kind of bright and perhaps close to the moon.
Well, at the moment, there are no bright evening planets. Jupiter is rising earlier and earlier, but you can't really see Jupiter unless you're up at 3, 4 in the morning. It's rising around 2 a.m., I think, right now. But over the next few months, it will be coming up earlier and earlier, and in February, I believe, then you'll be able to see it in the evening sky. Saturn, Mars, they are both now, they were very prominent this last spring and summer.
Yes,
and now,
they were.
Yes, and now they are in the sky right around the same time as the sun, so we're not seeing them. Uranus and Neptune are in the nighttime sky right now, and if you actually know where to look and you have really dark skies and an amazing set of eyes, you can see the planet Uranus with your naked eye. It's always been interesting to me. It took till 1781 when William Herschel discovered it before anybody noticed it. But it is very, very dim. This past lunar eclipse, 10 days ago or so, if you had been up and you had seen that and you had looked at it with a pair of binoculars, there was a dim star right near the moon that was the planet Uranus. And if you go online and look at pictures of that last lunar eclipse, especially ones where they left the camera open a little bit, you can see a little dim star not far away from the moon at all, and that was the planet
Uranus. That was Uranus.
Yes. But finding it is not easy.
Philip, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm here. All right.
Yes, what's on your mind?
What happened? Years back, I seen an eclipse. All right. But I went out and took a walk. And I was looking at the sidewalk, and the image of the eclipse was still on the sidewalk. Every little hole in the tree projecting the eclipse on the sidewalk. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, that is very interesting. If you know, if you're out just on a walk on any given day and you're looking at the sun shining through trees, leaves, things like that, putting little spots of sunlight on the ground, well, during an eclipse, a partial eclipse, those little round spots are little crescents. Yes, it is. It's an amazing, very neat thing. Or you can poke holes in a piece of paper and project that. I've seen photographs where people put a bunch of pinholes in a piece of paper, maybe spelling out their name, and then during the eclipse they held it up to a flat surface and there was their name in a bunch of little crescents.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
And Philip,
that's a great photo. I mean, if the sun were going to be out, that'd be a really neat way to remember this. You know, a fun thing to do with your kids maybe, because again, they don't happen often.
Thanks, Philip. Appreciate the call. Let's give Ray and Rhinelander a chance to join in. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi, Larry. Once again, thank you for your interest and your generosity on everything that you present. I've been listening to you since the 70s, and I don't know when you've been on the air, but I'll tell you, each day I look forward to what is next with the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you, Ray.
So anyways, besides that, I'm glad you have this person on today talking about all this, and I want to thank him also. And I want to know if he has heard of the COVAC, K-O-V-A-C, Planetarium, which is southeast of Rhinelander, where I live, in Monaco, Wisconsin. It's run by the son, his son, COVAC, who passed on, as far as I know. And he built this planetarium inside this building with a round dome, and you can go in there, and it turns around and shows you the position of the stars each time of the year and everything else and explains things. And I don't think a lot of people know about it. It's online and everything else. It's a really unique place.
Yeah, I do know about it. And, in fact, I subscribe to Sky and Telescope magazine, and a few months ago they had quite a detailed article about the maker of that planetarium and how he went about it, and it took years, and he did everything on his own, and he's pretty much self-taught, and
wow,
he had a lot of challenges, but it's now up, and it's a beautiful thing, all handmade.
Oh boy,
yeah,
it's now up.
So, we lost Ray there. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Look, I think the line kind of went dead on him. So he made the telescope and everything?
It's a planetarium.
Oh, it's a planetarium.
It's a planetarium where you walk inside.
Oh, that's right.
And he, unlike mine, which projects little images through some plastic with little clear spots on it, I'm pretty sure he used fluorescent paint or even glow-in-the-dark paint to paint every little star on the inside of the dome, and you go in there and you're able to look around. So,
wow.
Very, very cool.
Very, very cool. We have Jack from Arpan emailed and wondered why we don't have a solar and lunar eclipse once a month.
Well,
His 10-year-old asked that question.
Yes, it would be way easier to explain if I were standing with you and being able to use my arms and hands. But the basic reason is that we go around, in mostly a circle, we go around the sun once a year. The moon goes around us once a month in almost a circle as well. However, that circle, that orbit of the moon, is tilted compared to our orbit around the sun. So unless, you know, most months the moon, the shadow of the Earth or the shadow of the moon, they are either a little too high or a little too low when it goes by. When the moon goes by the sun, it's above it or it's below it as it goes around us. And then every once in a while, they just happen, those two paths happen to cross. And it's very predictable, and there are, you know, now you can get planetarium software and you can look back and forward in time to see when they will be. And ancient cultures, even though they didn't understand orbits and anything like that, they were able to predict eclipses just by watching over centuries and keeping good records and realizing, oh, wait, one happened now. That means another one's going to happen at this time. It's very complicated, and yet it's very predictable.
Very cool. Jennifer's telling me, a few callers have let us know that they have that same recollection as Randy about the shoebox for viewing a solar eclipse. I'm going to have to go online. I'm a little concerned. Shoebox for a solar eclipse.
Right. And I bet if you search shoebox solar eclipse, you'll get your answer. I'm a little concerned that maybe somebody decided, oh, this isn't safe. Otherwise, why aren't we hearing about it more recently? Sometimes when people say that, it isn't safe. Well, it can be safe, and I think we get a little too concerned sometimes. Looking at the sun is dangerous, but if you take care, it's not.
We have an email from Edie. I grew up in northern Ghana where an eclipse was a bad thing. Mm. During an eclipse, the whole village got together to drum and sing, entreating the sun to please release the moon. I just remember eclipses as an event to enjoy some festive drumming and singing.
Well, I'm glad you remember it that way.
But the adults had a look of terror that always confounded me.
Right. And you know, now when we know what's actually going on, we realize that it's not a dangerous thing. But many, many, many cultures saw events in the sky as harbingers of doom. Comet in the sky meant a king was going to die, or things like that. They saw it as bad luck, although others, supposedly the city of Rome was founded during a solar eclipse in, I believe, 476 BC.
Wow.
So again, these are events that happen rarely. So when they do happen and people don't know they're coming, imagine that the sun's up there every day and suddenly in the middle of the day it goes away. Yeah, that would be scary.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to take some more calls too. You can join in. We have open lines, get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. You and I were talking earlier before the show about comets, and there was a comet passing Mars a little bit ago that created some concern, actually, I guess.
Yes, just this past weekend, a comet called Comet Siding Spring, named after an observatory in Australia where it was discovered, it passed Mars, and it passed Mars very close. When it was discovered sometime over a year ago, for a while there was real concern that, or maybe excitement, that it would actually hit Mars. And if it had, it would have been scientifically interesting, I suppose, and at that time they thought it was much larger than it turned out to be. But yes, it passed within 90,000 miles of the planet. And a comet is basically a big ball of ice and a bit of rock, and as it nears the sun, it starts to melt. And so if it passed 80,000 miles from Mars, parts of it hit Mars, bits of it that had melted off. Well, there are three orbiting satellites there's more than that, actually, but three NASA satellites orbiting Mars. And they were a bit worried that this debris from this comet might harm them, so they messed with their orbit, so they were actually, Mars was in the way, and they're all safe. And in the next few weeks, if you look online, we should probably be seeing information, because every camera, the rovers on Mars, they were all aimed at this comet as it went by. And some amateurs here and probably professional astronomers here got some pictures of it. And you can go online and see a picture where Mars is very, very bright in the photo, and there's this dim comet very, very close to it.
Very, very interesting. Comets, I mean, so interesting to me. And I, again, thinking back to Hale-Bopp, the comet of I forget how many years back now, but it was so close and for so long.
Yes, 1996. Hale-Bopp was a huge comet. That's one of the reasons that it was so bright. It was very, very large. This one that passed Mars turned out even smaller than they thought it was going to be. Yes, I remember Hale-Bopp, 1996, and it was so bright. I lived right in the heart of Minneapolis, and it was easily visible.
Yeah, it was with a naked eye. I mean,
oh, yes. Oh, my, yes.
It was really something to see. I'll never forget that as long as I live. Antonio in Marinette, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I love your show. And hi, guest. I just heard this lady mentioning something about their African villagers crying, which immediately took me back to where I grew up in Sicily. I grew up in a really small village of 31 houses grand total. And I remember when I was a real young boy, just after World War II, and all of a sudden one night, all of the villagers got together with their rifles and everything else and kept on shooting at the moon and kept on praying, because their belief was God was residing in the moon and somebody was taking over his territory. And when I heard that story, I had to laugh at myself. Basically, I just want to relay a minor memory.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. What a great story.
Well, it is a great story. And again, yeah. When you don't know what's happening, when it's outside of your experience, again, the sun, we depend on it every single day. That's where the word day comes from. To have it suddenly go away, yes, I can see where that would be a very frightening thing.
A caller asked if is it safe to use a mirror to watch the eclipse?
No. The mirror will if you use it and reflect it into your eyes, it will definitely cause damage as well.
Ron in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I have a couple ways of observing a solar eclipse. Years ago, our father bought us an old, a reflector, 2.5-inch mirror reflector, and then to observe, of course, the instructions said, if you're going to look at the sun, you got to project it on a piece of paper. And later on, I bought a telephoto lens, which I can't use with my digital camera, and what I do is screw on a couple enlargers on it, and you get a pretty good image of the sun. I use it to observe sunspots. I saw the transit of Venus, and of course, you probably can observe a solar eclipse. But I didn't get in on the beginning of the program. What hour on Thursday is the solar eclipse going to occur again?
The moon will start biting into the sun at about 4:30, and at about
in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, and at about 5:40 is the peak of the eclipse, but it
will
still.
How much is that in Wisconsin?
It's about 50 to 60% of the sun's surface will be gone, and it will still be going on when the sun sets. And again, if you have a clear west by southwest horizon, at that point, you know, if it's very low, you could probably look at it without protection. You know, the way you can often look at sunsets through the haze.
Okay. Now, these hours that you gave—that's daylight time.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So 4:30 till sunset.
And the day is?
The day after tomorrow.
Day after tomorrow.
Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And then I also wanted to point out that huge sunspot that's on the sun right now, it will be there the day after tomorrow. So if you have a camera and you have a telephoto lens right around sunset, might want to take a shot.
Yeah, why not? Ron, thank you very much for calling. And other people were asking about the times again, so I'm glad he came on with that. Ellen in Waupun, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This past Sunday, we were out driving in the Fond du Lac County area and saw the ring around the sun, and I believe, is that a sun dog?
Well, sun dogs are actually usually spots on either side of the sun.
Okay. And this was a total ring.
Yep. And that happens. There are all sorts of things that can happen in the sky. with the sun, and it all depends on ice crystals. Ice crystals acting as mirrors, as lenses, or water crystals. That's why we have rainbows. But depending on the shape of these crystals, they reflect at different angles. So you'll see the sun dogs on either side. There are half arcs. There are full rings around the sun. And they all have names, but I sure don't know them. And some are very common. Some are very rare. And here in Wisconsin, because we do get colder skies, we see them fairly often because the ice crystals are up there.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ellen, for calling. I appreciate your call. As I was mentioning earlier, you have taken some just absolutely amazing astronomy photos. How do you do it? Is it...
It would take more than a show to explain all the things, but I want to recommend, if you do want to do that, a website called cloudynights.com, cloudynights.com. It is just astronomers, people who are interested, beginners, absolute experts, the best astrophotographers in the world post their pictures there and answer your questions. There are special cameras for astrophotography where you take video of something and then software combines your video into one image. Usually an astrophoto at night taken with a DSLR, what you do is you take a bunch of images and then you combine them using, again, free software.
Mm-hmm.
It's easily available free online. And there is software you can also buy. But the reason you combine them is it gets rid of the noise that's inherent in especially long exposures. And you need to take long exposures because the night sky is dim.
Paul, this has been amazingly fun.
Yeah,
as it always is.
Yes, it always is.
Oh, I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much. And again, your site, your website.
It's Seeing Stars WI, that's Seeing Stars Wisconsin, .wordpress.com.
Always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks,
right.
Paul.
Thank you very much.
Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's an active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club and does a lot of work with youngsters. And I hope you'll go to his website and take a look because there's some pretty cool things that he's doing with them. Getting tuned into what's going on in the night sky, I think it makes all of us a little bit more observant. And when you notice cool things, it's a lot of fun to capture that image. Coming up next, Jack Socha has some advice for choosing the right digital camera for your needs and how to use it. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.